This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, April the 5th, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Tim Kirkchin, and I'm filling in for a traveling Buster Olney. I'm in a hotel here in Bristol, Connecticut. We're going to go straight to the news of the day. Number one, the Braves game at Nationals Park for Monday has been postponed, and Buster is reporting that the Nationals will open their season Tuesday night against the Braves, not Monday night. As far as history goes, Shohei Ohtani of the Angels had a historic night Sunday night where he threw pitches at 100 miles an hour. He hit a ball 450 feet, including this missile in the first inning.
And the pitch. Swing and a ball hammered. Right field. Way back. On its way. Gone! Shohei Ohtani wasting no time. Absolutely tomahawking a fastball at the top edge of the zone. 115.2 miles an hour. It went 450 to right center. Angels won. White Sox nothing. Shohei goes yard.
Speaking of really long home runs, Fernando Tatis Jr., the spectacular shortstop for the Padres, hit a ball yesterday 465 feet.
High drive to deep left center field for Fernando Tatis Jr. Home run! Fernando's first of 2021 gets the Padres on the board in the ninth.
Alec Boehm of the Phillies didn't hit a ball out of the ballpark yesterday. He hit a routine line drive up the middle, but it came in the eighth inning and led to a 2-1 win over the Braves. The Phillies are 3-0.
Breaking ball, line up the middle, a base hit into center field. Hoskins around third, they're waving him to the plate. Pache with a throw home, and it is not in time. Alec Boehm has put the Phillies on top. RBI single to center, and the Phillies lead it 2-1.
And in maybe the best story of the whole weekend, that's Trey Mancini of the Orioles, a cancer survivor. Red Sox manager Alex Cora said before the game Sunday, it doesn't matter if Mancini hits 180 or 330 this year, he should be the comeback player of the year no matter what. And I agree. And Sunday, Mancini had a big RBI double.
Here's the pitch. A swing, a line drive, center field by Mancini. This ball is off the top of the fence. This will bring in one run. Valleca right behind as Mancini ends up on second base. A two-run double. The Orioles have played it 5 runs in this inning and made it an 8-0 ball game in the third.
Baseball is back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with more than 170 live Major League Baseball games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. And the fantasy baseball season is underway. That means fantasy-focused baseball with Eric Carabel and Tristan Cockcroft is a must-listen for all fantasy baseball players. You can listen to fantasy-focused baseball wherever you get your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. For your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The
White Zone is for... Okay, now we're joined by Buster Olney. Buster, where are you right now?
I'm in the Atlanta airport, Tim, which is, you know, anyone who listened to podcasts in years past knows that we had these Baggage Claim Mondays where sometimes we would do the podcast from, you know, either a concourse someplace or literally a baggage claim. But those things, the details you don't think of, you and I talked about, you know, doing this podcast this morning. And then as I was looking to find a place to do this, I realized, oh my God, there's a mask mandate. And I can't do this without a mask. So I had to find a way to wrap the phone line inside the mask so that it could work and I could still follow the mandate. So welcome to 2021.
Yeah. Well, this is quite a life you've carved out for yourself, Buster. I would be really proud of myself if I were you. But God bless you for doing a podcast from the Atlanta airport. We'll get right to it. You were at the game last night when Shohei Ohtani made history on many different levels. What was it like being there for that?
It was amazing. I mean, what a show he put on for the first four innings anyway. You know, that first home run, the sound of him hitting that ball 451 feet was just extraordinary in his first plate appearance. But then also to see, and Tim, you know, I've seen him pitch before, but I can't remember the last time. I don't think I've actually seen him pitch in person. The physicality of him as a pitcher is extraordinary because he's so big and he throws so hard. And so in that first inning, he threw 101. And he hit a ball 115 miles per hour, and it was amazing. And you saw why guys like Mike Trout and Tony La Russa, the Hall of Fame manager, told us before the game, there's nobody else like him. And he showed that for four innings last night. Now, the way it all came tumbling to an end, literally, with him getting knocked down at home plate, that was scary. But the Angels told us late last night that, you know, they don't think he's seriously hurt. He's going to be reevaluated today. And they think he's going to be fine. But you can understand why the Angels this spring were so encouraged and feeling like, you know what, this could be great. What did you see?
I was dazzled. He threw eight pitches at 100 miles an hour. The exit velo, as you just said, was 115. He hit a ball 450 feet and threw a pitch, more than one pitch, at 100 miles an hour. Nobody has done this ever in the history of baseball. I mean, we know what kind of hitter and pitcher Babe Ruth was, but he wasn't throwing 100. And this is the first time a starting pitcher has ever hit in the second hole in a lineup in the history of baseball. I'm sitting at home in my hotel room here in Bristol, and I'm absolutely overwhelmed by what I'm watching. And what was beyond the first swing that he took, another takeaway from you from what you saw?
That you can understand why the Angels now, the fourth year of trying to make this work, have decided, you know, we're going to take the bubble wrap off and we're going to see exactly what this might be. And we're not going to worry about, you know, having just a schedule in place and adhering only to the schedule. You know, I talked to Ohtani among other reporters on Saturday, and I asked him a question about, you know, why is it that it's important to you to pitch on the days that you hit, something he's always wanted to do, hit on the days that he pitched. And he said, because I really like the idea of being able to help myself. And Madden, as part of their conversations this spring, talked to him about that, heard that. And last night's game, as you know, was the first time that an American League team voluntarily gave up the designated hitter since 1976. You mentioned how long it's been since the pitcher started in a game hitting second, 1903. 1903. And so, you know, to see, you know, how well that it played out for four innings, you can understand why they're going to try to build off that going forward. Tim, one of those 100-mile-per-hour fastballs that he threw was from a set position with runners on base. There's no windup and he's throwing 100 miles per hour. And I loved, and I, Doug Holmes, our great director, during the course of the broadcast, I suggested to him, like, look, collect the sound of Ohtani, you know, screaming as he releases pitches. I mean, you remember Monica Seles. That's what it sounded like at times in terms of, you know, his emotions and the grunts that he emitted when he was throwing the ball 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, it was remarkable. And last thing, Buster, the slide into the plate by Abreu was clean. Is there any reason to think Ohtani is going to miss a start or not going to be able to play? He looked okay when he came out to join Jared Walsh after the walk-off.
That's right. And the Angels last night, you know, sent word to us that he was removed from the game because of the where he was with the pitch count. And I do think there's an argument to be made that Joe Maddon waited two batters too long to get him out because it felt like he really lost the strike zone. But it seems like he's going to be okay. I have no doubt that he's not going to play today. And then, you know, as Ohtani said the other day, he'll have another conversation with Joe. He says he has conversations with him every day. How are you feeling? What do you think? I mean, this first few days of the regular season, the Angels have already sort of broken the glass in the way that they handled this in previous years. You know, typically in the past when he was going to start a game, he would not play the day before that start. Well, he started at DH on Saturday and he comes back on Sunday and he hits and he pitches and he shows us all how great he could be.
Right. Staying in Anaheim, Buster, your main Mercedes, what did you see from the kid who had never started a major league game until the other day? And then he got a hit in eight straight at bats. No one's ever gone 8-for-8 to start any major league season ever. Tell me a story about your mean Mercedes from what you saw.
Yeah. And Tony La Russa talked about him before the game with us in our Zoom call about how, you know, this is someone who, let's face it, a week ago, there was no plan that he was going to play three straight days. They were intrigued by what they had seen from his offense, and they have in recent years. He's always hit when he's been in the minors. You know, I texted with Dan Duquette, the former general manager of the Orioles yesterday, and asked him about Mercedes and, you know, and why was it that, you know, it took a guy who played 10 years in the minor leagues and hit 302 that long to get to the big leagues. I guess at one point in his career, there are questions about his work ethic and how devoted he was to his craft. He certainly, you and I have seen plenty of examples of guys who can flat out hit, but they don't really seem to have a position. You know, Rick Hahn, the general manager of the White Sox, told me yesterday that Mercedes, he can really throw. He's got a powerful arm. There are things that they like about him as a catcher, but let's face it, he's not on the team, if not for the injury, to Eloy Jimenez. And then he steps up and has these great days. And how about that moment when Albert Pujols threw him the ball, threw him the ball from his first major league hit? You know, I think it was Madden was telling us yesterday that, you know, this is someone who Mercedes may not be well known to casual baseball fans in the United States, but everybody in Dominican Republic knows who he is because he's been around so long. He's such a good hitter.
It's amazing. 5-for-5 in his first major league start. Edgar Martinez, 2,247 hits, never got five hits in a game. He's one of the great hitters I've ever seen. Lou Gehrig never got five hits in a major league game. And your main Mercedes did in his first major league start, only in baseball. Okay, switching gears again, Buster. The baseball has been, you know, examined it tremendously already. Is it traveling? Is it not traveling? What have you seen so far from the 2021 baseball?
Okay. I just want to preface this by, I really don't want you to yell at me because what I'm going to base this off of is a sample size of exactly one game, in California in a night game. When you know that you have the marine layer and the ball doesn't travel as far, there's no doubt in my mind that the baseball is very different after watching last night's game, because there probably were, you know, 3 to 4 balls that were hit and you're like, oh my God, that is so far gone. And the ball absolutely died in the warning tracks or in front of the fence. You know, you could see the glimpses of on the faces of hitters like Mike Trout, who clubbed one ball to center field and it just died. And it was not something we've seen in recent years. So I do think the ball is very different. What about you, based on what you've seen?
Well, first off, you yell at me all the time when you host the show. So I'm not going to yell at you because I think there's something to this. We did opening day Yankees and Blue Jays. Jay Bruce hit a ball that we all said, that's out of here. And it didn't come close to leaving the ballpark. And yesterday we did the Braves Phillies game. Ozzie Albies, granted, he's a little guy, but he hit a ball that we were sure was going to leave the yard, and it barely made the warning track. So I've seen a couple instances where I thought the ball isn't traveling quite as far, and I don't think that's the worst thing ever. I think we have too many homers, which lead to too many strikeouts, too many walks. So maybe if the ball isn't traveling quite as much, it might be a positive thing for the game.
Can I jump in real quick? Just to back up on that. You know, you're right. I think it's got to the point, the game has gotten to the point where there's too much all or nothing. And that's why when a guy like Yermín Mercedes comes in and you see this unbelievable, simple approach with two strikes where, you know, on strike one and strike two, yeah, he's trying to jack the ball. And then he gets to a two strike count and he's focusing on putting the ball in play. Shocking. On making contact. And we, you know, we talked to Joe Maddon before the game last night, and he's been talking to his players about going back to 1985, about putting, he refers to it as moving the ball, putting the ball in play and making the opposing team make plays. And we saw in that, you know, in that crazy sequence of events between the White Sox and Angels where the ball is being thrown all over the place, you put the ball in play, you never know.
Right. But one team that has put the ball in play really well so far, Buster, is the Astros. They swept the A's. They beat them four in a row. They outscored them by 26 runs. They're the fourth team ever to score eight or more runs in each of their first four games of a season. No team has ever scored eight or more runs in their first five games of the season. From a distance, what have you seen from the Astros?
You touched on it. You know, this is a team that I think puts the ball in play. And I think they have a chip on their shoulder. You know, whether it's guys who are sick of the conversation about 2017 and the sign stealing scandal, or you have a Carlos Correa who I think clearly is very angry with the negotiations he had with the Astros, where, you know, the offer they gave him was about one third of what Francisco Lindor got, one of his buddies and rivals that he grew up with in Puerto Rico. I think they got a lot of guys who are trying to prove something. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. And, you know, the booing, I think, is emboldening them. They're saying, look, if you don't like us, we don't care anymore. We've been through this now. We understand what it's like. I'm very impressed with what I've seen from the Astros so far. It's been a very, very good start for them. A pretty bad start for the Braves so far. You know, we did their game yesterday, Buster, and they entered the game with as many hits in two games, eight, as Yermín Mercedes had, which is never a good sign.
Wow.
And worse than that are the Red Sox, who are in equal trouble. Buster, they've lost 23 of their last 34 games at Fenway Park going back to last year. And they just got swept by the Orioles, who had a tremendous weekend. But again, from a distance, what about the Red Sox so far?
Okay. Having, you know, grown up in New England, I have so many friends who are Red Sox fans, hear from Red Sox fans all the time. I absolutely think that starting now, the Red Sox are officially on the clock with their fans. Is that necessarily the most important factor in terms of change? No. The question is whether or not the team is going to be on the clock with owner John Henry and with Tom Werner. And we have seen in the past, Tim, that they will blow up plans in order to placate the fans. You know, that's how Ben Cherington wound up getting fired or shoved aside and replaced by Dave Dombrowski. And it's why, you know, I mean, I think Chaim Bloom is a really smart guy, and it does seem like he's trying to put in this Dodgers system, a lot like Andrew Friedman, his former colleague with the Rays, has put in L.A. I just don't know if he's going to have the time to do it, because right, they have to play better than how they play. What do you think?
Yes, I agree. And back to the Orioles for a second, and this has a little something to do with the deadened ball, if that's indeed true. The Orioles scored 18 runs in that series without hitting a home run. And for those of us that want more of the ball in play and more stuff in between the homers and strikeouts, to score 18 runs without hitting a home run, I think that's a really good sign. And I'm not suggesting the Orioles are a really good team or anything like that, but that was very encouraging to watch them play the way that they did. You know, Cedric Mullins bunting the ball, putting it in play. Of course, Trey Mancini, very good sign there for the Orioles. Also, Buster, really good sign for the Phillies. We did their game yesterday, and I know it's only three games, but there's a different feel and a different look to that team already. Now, that bullpen is a completely different bullpen than the one that had a 7.06 ERA. They've basically gone, when you look just at velocity, from the 22nd hardest throwing bullpen last year to the hardest throwing bullpen this year with the people they've added, including Jose Alvarado, who's thrown 100 miles already. So 7 1/3 scoreless innings by the Phillies bullpen, three straight games with no runs allowed by the bullpen. That didn't happen once all last year. I think the Phillies are better than people think already. Am I overreacting here?
No. The person this winter, when we were doing podcasts every other week, Paul Imbecides came on, the great race director we have at ESPN. Don't tell him I said that, because I'll never hear the end of that. He made a point that, you know, the Phillies bullpen last year was so historically bad, and if it's league average, if it's in the middle, then this is a team that potentially could pick up a bunch of wins. And it's better than that. Look, you know, Cape Dombrowski, through the years, has gotten some criticism for, you know, spending resources and being too willing to trade prospects and spend owners' money. But one thing you hear about him all the time is he's really good at identifying pitching. And, you know, whether it's number three starter in the Mariners rotation named Doug Fister that he sort of plucked out, or an Anibal Sanchez, he seems to have a knack for seeing guys who can help him. And look, if that bullpen's different, they have a good lineup. The division, I don't think any team is necessarily going to run away with it because these guys are all going to beat each other up. I think they absolutely could be in play. Now, for the Phillies' sake, I wish that it was a 14-team playoff field rather than 10, but they're better than they were last year, no doubt. What do you think?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, their everyday lineup should be better with some healthier people. You know, Andrew McCutchen is moving a whole lot better with that knee. Alec Bohm, you know, another big hit yesterday. He's hit .452 with runners in scoring position last year. Drove in the go-ahead run yesterday. I just refuse to believe that a Girardi-Dombrowski team is just going to, just struggle for another year. I just don't see it happening. I think they're right in the middle now of this race in the NL East, and I think it took three games for me to figure it out. That's awfully quick, but I liked what I saw. Now, Buster, last thing, we had a little dust up between the Cardinals and the Reds. Nick Castellanos and Yadier Molina got into it a little bit. What did you read out of all of that? You know, two games in to have a little dust up is a little early.
Was it not one of the most polite fights you've ever seen in your life, Tim? Castellanos, you know, he was obviously upset with being hit by a pitch, and you and I have never been hit by a pitch in a major league game, but you and I have talked to a lot of players who will tell you it really hurts. So when Castellanos crossed his home plate and he stares down the pitcher who was covering home plate who had just hit him, that was just, you know, frustration. And then when Yadier Molina comes up behind him and shoves him, you could just see Castellanos like back off, like, oh my God, that's a future Hall of Famer who is an incredible leader. So Castellanos backs up, and I was watching Molina during that fight, and he was saying some things, and he was moving around him, but it always felt like that he was keeping somebody between him and the Reds. It was one of the most polite bench clearing incidents I've ever seen.
Right. And Castellanos said after the game, he said, look, Yadier Molina can punch me right in the face, and I'm still going to ask him for an autographed jersey. That's how much respect he has for Yadier Molina, and so does everyone else. And in Castellanos's defense, if that's the right word, the next day, meaning Sunday, he hit a triple and a home run. So the, you know, the ejection and the little fight that they, he was involved in sure didn't affect him. In fact, it seemed to have angered him to the point where he played even better. So that was an interesting start to the Cardinals and the Reds. All right, Buster, before you go, anything else we need to know about before you jump on another plane and go to another baggage claim Monday? Anything else you saw this weekend you want to talk about?
Well, I just should mention, Tim, I think that we are going to hear in the week ahead where the 2021 All-Star Game is going to be played. Major League Baseball officials know that this is a decision they have to make quickly. They're getting a lot of input from various teams saying, we want the game over here. You know, we would love to host the game. There are, from what I understand, mayors calling, there are lieutenant governors calling, making cases for their respective cities. You and I have both heard Milwaukee, which would be away if they play the game there, to honor Hank Aaron, who started his Major League career in Milwaukee. We've heard about Kansas City. I've heard people mention San Diego. I kind of wonder about Colorado, that, you know, the Rockies might wind up being the host city. Is there any city that really jumps out at you?
Well, I thought Milwaukee made the most sense because it's an indoor facility, so you don't have to worry about a rainout. But the whole Hank Aaron part of it, I think, makes the most sense. But yeah, I heard the Rockies yesterday too. That makes, I think, a whole lot of places make a lot of sense. You know, it's amazing to me, Buster, you know, teams that get the All-Star game start working on that at least a year and a half in advance to try to make everything right. And now they're going to be working on it with like 3 months in advance. That's going to be tricky, but it just shows you how important the All-Star game is to franchises and to cities, that all these teams are lining up saying, please come to our place. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens here in the next week.
Absolutely. And then, Tim, today, thanks for grabbing the steering wheel.
Well, my pleasure, Buster. Let's just get you back to New York in one piece. I'm sure you haven't slept, but I don't think you've slept since 1985. So that's okay. I think if anyone can handle this kind of these kind of rigors, it's you. So travel safely.
Thanks, Tim.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
In preparation for the White Sox-Angels game Sunday night on ESPN, Buster interviewed one of the best players in the game, Tim Anderson, who's also one of the great personalities in the game. This is a really fun interview with a fun kid.
What do you see for Tim Anderson in 2021?
The biggest part is having fun. If I have fun, then, you know, we're in for a great season.
Do you put numbers on that in your head? And if you do, you want to share those?
No, I don't put numbers on. The sky's limit. You never know. You know, I hit 335. I never expected that. So how can I put a number on it now?
When you were a kid, what major leaguer did you want to emulate?
You know, my first big league game that, you know, I ever been to, I played in. So, you know, I think that's a pretty cool story.
All right. You're from Alabama. Auburn or Roll Tide?
Roll Tide, baby. Roll Tide. Don't tell Bo Jackson and Frank Thomas. They'll kill me.
How would you describe a leadoff hitter's job?
Get the party started.
Tell me about League of Leaders.
We started this foundation, man, just targeting kids that, you know, that happen to be in any type of violence. Because, you know, on the South Side, you know, some kids have to grow up before, you know, their time. And, you know, I just try to create an environment for, you know, kids to be around me, to be happy, to put smiles on their faces and kind of, you know, just forget the struggles for a little minute and, you know, enjoy life and see how great life is. And, you know, try to make them get the bigger picture.
T.A., who's the most exciting player in baseball?
Me. Well, why would I say anybody else? Come on. Me. I am. I'm gonna continue to be. I'm gonna continue to be myself. I'm gonna continue to have fun, man. I'm gonna continue to enjoy the moment, and you know, man, just keep living, man, and having fun, man. Life is beautiful.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Tim. Bleacher Tweets for a Monday. And first, I'm going to throw you a curveball here. I didn't put this in the rundown, but what did you think of my guy, John Means, in his opening day start? Made the Red Sox look silly. What's your take so far?
Well, what do you mean he's your guy? You're an Orioles fan? Is that it?
Oh, so
he's
yeah. Your guy? Oh, yeah. My guy.
Right. Yeah, I know you're from Maryland, Taylor. Okay. John Means was great the other day. That changeup was devastating. I know the Red Sox hitters were off balance all day. I watched every pitch of that game. So I'm not saying he's an ace number one starting pitcher, but man, did he look like one the other day. And the Orioles have something to look forward to every fifth day if John Means continues to pitch like that.
Ain't the beer cold, Hon. Let's go to the tweets. Kyle Benning at Kyle_Benning writes in, opening weekend overreaction edition of Bleacher Tweets. If you had to bet the family farm on one of two of these award winners happening in 2021, who are you taking? Otani as AL MVP or Mercedes as AL Rookie of the Year?
Well, first off, only Buster has a family farm, not me.
What would you bet?
No one would be worse on a farm than me. Let's be clear about that. I couldn't milk a cow, bale any hay, all that. Whatever. I'm going to go with Otani. Carl Ravitch from ESPN picked him to win the MVP before the season started, before we saw the theatrics of Sunday night. Otani is a remarkable athlete, Taylor. We haven't seen anybody like him really in baseball history. I mean, Babe Ruth didn't throw 100 miles an hour, and he wasn't pitching and hitting all the time in a game like Otani did on Sunday night. If he throws like that, he's going to win more than 10 games. If he swings a bat like that, he's going to hit more than 30 homers. And if you hit 30 homers and you win 10 games for a team that goes to the playoffs, and the Angels at least have a shot to do that, I think he's got a chance to win the MVP. You know, your mean Mercedes had like the greatest weekend any young kid has ever had. But looking forward, I'm going with Otani for MVP based on that.
So if Buster's betting the family farm, what would you bet? Are you betting the house? Are you betting a ride? You have a bicycle that you like to ride that you're fond of?
I'm not betting my house because we have a full house now. My daughter and her family have moved in as she moves to Maryland, so I can't sell the house. I'll sell my car, but my car is a Honda, okay? It's a Honda Accord. It's like the greatest car ever, and I love it, but I would sell my car before I would sell my house.
All right. Let's go to Chris at BergFan004. He writes in, with the smallest of sample sizes after this weekend and two teams yet to play, what team decision or player performance has stood out the most or been the most surprising? I guess outside of Mercedes at this point, we've talked about him a bunch.
Well, Mercedes is the biggest story of the weekend. But I'm going to talk a little bit about the Phillies. I'm really surprised. Three games in, they're way better than I thought they were going to be, in that their bullpen, 7 1/3 scoreless innings so far. Keep in mind, they had a 7.06 bullpen ERA last year. That's the worst bullpen ERA by any team since the 1930 Phillies. And they've come flying out of the box, winning three games in a row, all of them relatively close and all bullpen related. So that's the biggest team surprise so far, is not that the Phillies are 3-0, but that they're 3-0 based on how well their bullpen has pitched.
Next up, we have Corey Rukert at CoreyR_12. He writes in, watching Otani and wondering why so many Japanese pitchers use the splitter. Seems very common with them. Any reason why?
That's a good question. I just think the culture in Japan is to throw the split. I mean, Hideo Nomo came over here and just dazzled people with that pitch. And then Yu Darvish followed and he did the same thing. So if the two of the best pitchers ever to come out of that country come to the United States, come to the big leagues and dominate with their split, why wouldn't every other Japanese pitcher do that. And I'm no expert on Japanese baseball, Taylor, but they don't throw as hard as we do over here. Although Darvish and Otani are certainly two guys that throw exceptionally hard. But if you don't throw hard, you have to deceive the hitter. You have to be a little trickier. And that's what the split can do. And if you throw it right, nobody can hit that. Hector Neris threw a couple of splits yesterday that the Braves couldn't hit in a million years. That's how good a pitch it is. It also wears on your arm, though. And over there, they throw so much that they seem to be able to throw through any sort of arm injury. I think that might explain to some degree how many splits are thrown in Japan.
Last one for today, Joe Clark at Astro Joe 319. He writes in, Houston looked very good on the road in Oakland over the weekend. The distaste from A's fans was palpable, but I think it is galvanizing the Astros. As Reggie Jackson said, they don't boo nobody. Seems like they're feeding off that hate that's coming out of the fans.
Yeah, I think they are, Taylor, and I think it's real. I think if the season had gone off like 162 games last year, the Astros would have been pounded mercilessly, but we didn't. They kind of avoided one. They're going to hear it most of the year. But I know some of the Astros that I've talked to have basically said, you know, bring it on. We got a really good team. Zach Greinke said after opening night, look, they're going to stop booing if we keep winning. And that's what the Astros have done. They have a really good offensive team, which I think we all knew. And they're pitching is sneaky good so far. So that's how you stop people from booing. You hit the ball out of the ballpark and you run around the bases.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Tim, thanks for stepping in.
Right. And thank you, Taylor, for helping me out, especially with all the technological issues that I suffer every single day of my life. Thank you, Buster, for letting me take over for a day, pinch hit for a day. And I just hope Buster makes it home safely. He will not have an hour's sleep, I'm sure.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.